Hey everyone, welcome to the Basically Bookish podcast. I'm Abby.
And I'm Ashley, and we're going to be chatting all things bookish. This is episode 29 of the Basically Bookish podcast, and today we are doing a little behind the scenes of a debut author with our guest, Jennifer Dybel. So welcome, Jennifer.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
This is going to be fun because we haven't had an author on that's in like the debut author situation.
Oh, nice.
So I'm very excited about this.
Oh, this is exciting.
Okay. I have a list of questions here for you. The first one, name one thing that was a surprise as a new author, like about the process or just anything along the journey that maybe was different than you anticipated.
Honestly, I think kind of the waiting. Like, I knew there would be waiting once you like pitched to an agent or a publisher, and then waiting as they like processed or whatever. But I didn't really realize the waiting involved like between phases once it's actually like happening. I actually just posted about this the other day. It came up in my memories. It was 2 years ago yesterday, I think. Yes, 2 years ago yesterday that I got the call that they were going to be offering me a contract.
Wow.
But I couldn't really tell anybody outside my immediate family until it was all signed and everything. And that didn't happen until June. So
oh, no.
I had always, I know. And I got the call at school and my students all knew that I was in the process of trying to get published. And so they were like rooting me on and like, they wanted to know. And it was so hard because I got the call in the morning during my prep time and I was so excited. And I always envisioned like running in and telling them, I did it. I did it. And I couldn't, it was June and they weren't there.
Oh, man. Of course.
So that took me a little bit by surprise, but I understood why. I just was like, oh, well, okay, then this is going to go down a little differently than I imagined in my, you know, self-fulfilling daydreams.
Wow. I mean, that's a long time, especially like to not be able to tell someone like how excited you are. Okay. So since you had the waiting period, did you still have that like rush of excitement telling everyone when you finally could, or had the like shine worn off just a smidge?
Oh no, for sure. The excitement was still there. Cause I had been, you know, I mean, I have been wanting to pursue publication for a really long time, like a decade. And I had seen, it felt like all my other friends had accomplished it, or a lot of my friends, especially in the writing world, had all accomplished it. And I celebrated with them. And I was like taking, I was like, ooh, that's a cool way to announce it or whatever. So I had been kind of like when like I was the last of my friends to get married too. So I kind of felt like that. So when it was my turn, I was like, oh, I'm going to live this up. So we had a lot of fun dreaming up how we wanted to make the announcement. I had envisioned it doing it kind of like a pregnancy announcement because this was like another baby. My husband was like, I don't think so. But we ended up, it was actually our 19th wedding anniversary, but we were celebrating our 20th a year early because we won a trip to Hawaii. So we decided we were going to make some announcement that way. And so we found this beautiful spot and I held up these papers that we were pretending were the actual contract, but they weren't. And like the Hawaiian background, and then made the announcement on social media that way. So it was still way fun to kind of put it out there.
That sounds really fun.
It was awesome.
So, you can't go wrong with Hawaii.
That kind of, yeah, you can't go wrong with Hawaii.
Yeah.
Okay, that leads into my next question. So from start to finish, I mean, you said a decade, but like from thought process of the book that you have published now to like holding it in your hand, what was the time frame on that?
Okay, so I first started writing A Dance in Donegal when I was expecting our first baby, and she just turned 16 in January.
Oh, my gosh.
We had just moved back. We had spent 2 years in Donegal as students studying the culture and the language and stuff. And we came back, and my husband went to graduate school and was working full time. And I had a lot of time on my hands and just really kind of needed a way to process everything that we had been through, because it was a really difficult 2 years that we were over there, but it was also amazing. And then one day I had just finished reading this book, and I don't remember what it was, one of those that has like a compilation of novellas from different authors, and it was about a sewing circle. And so then each novella was from the point of view of one of the different ladies in the sewing circle. And it was really neat. And at the end, the publishing house was like, we're always looking for great stories, especially surrounding cultural celebrations. And when I read that, it was like, boom, this immediate story idea popped in my head for a girl who moves from America to Ireland to be a teacher. And so I sat down, started writing it like right away. So that was, 17 years ago? Oh, and the book just released in February. So it was a long time coming.
This is why you teared up when you opened that box of books.
Yes, that's why I did the ugly cry in front of God and everybody. Yes.
Can you imagine?
Yeah.
I can't. Like, that's such a long time to wait for like a dream to like come about. I mean,
it was
so props to you for being tenacious and seeing it through.
Thank you. I mean, I will say, once she was born, the manuscript sat for ages, probably several years before I picked it up again. And so that's one reason why it took so long, is because I was only working on it kind of in fits and starts. And then there was a point where my husband had this little like come to Jesus with me. He's like, look, this is what you really want to do. You need to go after it. So either finish it and pursue it, or like, let it go. And I was like, okay, I think I'm going to let it go. And then I was like, no, I can't let it go. And so then I finally finished it. And from the time I finished it, things did go fairly quickly in publishing world standards. But yeah, it was a long road to get to that point.
So were you always confident in like, your story? I mean, since it was like essentially so long of you like writing and waiting and that kind of thing, like, were there doubts about like, this is my story, this is what I want it to be? Or was this like, this is a story of your heart and this is what I want to tell? Like, did doubt creep in as you waited?
Totally.
Or were you always confident?
I mean, I knew the story, and I knew the moment I started writing, I knew exactly what the final scene was going to be. And that's what the final scene in the book is. But I think what was the original first chapter is now a short scene that pops up in like chapter 6 or something. Like, I went through loads and loads and loads of rewrites to get it just right. So I always believed in the story, and I knew being set in Ireland, like, people would be drawn to that idea, because I've never met anybody, when you mention Ireland, that goes, ugh, no, I'm not interested. Like, everyone goes, oh, Ireland. So I had confidence in that, but I didn't always have confidence in myself to execute what I had envisioned.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us about your favorite first when it comes to this whole journey. Like, I know there's a lot of firsts that come along with, like, you know, opening that box of books or turning something in, or all of those little firsts that can be so meaningful to an author. So, like, what would be your favorite of the firsts?
Gosh, that's hard. That's like picking a favorite kid.
You can pick two. It's okay.
I mean,
I won't make you choose two.
They all kind of run together. The moment opening the box and holding it in my hand for the first time was really special, because not only was I bawling, my husband was bawling. I have a video of him because the dedication, I dedicated that book to him because he was my champion supporter throughout the entire thing. And he didn't know that I had dedicated it to him. So after he stopped filming me, then I was like, okay, now it's your turn. And I said, open to this page. And he read it. And then he just like Like, if you thought I was ugly crying, like, he was, like, full on, like, and it was so sweet, but he was like, you have to promise me never to show that to anybody. I was like, okay. But the kids were all there with me, and just, like, experiencing that together as a family, because we'd been through so much over the years as I was writing it, and, like, being able to tell my kids, like, you're never too old or too young to pursue your dream. If there's something that you're passionate about, you know, stick with it. And so I think that was like the culminating moment of everything. And that's one that's like tucked away in my heart that I think of on rough days and stuff like that. So that probably would be like the favorite.
The top.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, I watched your video of opening those books, and honestly, like, it's hard to not tear up when you see, like, the excitement on everyone's face as you, like, open the books, and you were tearing up, and, like, you could just see, like, the kind of fulfillment of all of your hard work, like, in those moments on your faces. I mean, it's there. It was, I'm glad you did the video, because it was nice to see.
Oh, good. Well, that's good.
Okay. Are you an avid reader, and have you had to adjust your time and your reading habits since becoming a published author? If so.
I would say that I am an avid reader, but I'm not as avid as other avids. I really did not get into reading until I was an adult. As a child, I thought it was boring. I would have much rather been outside choreographing a dance or something like that. But I realized once I got into reading that it wasn't that I didn't like reading. I just hadn't found what I enjoy reading, because I was trying to force myself to do what all my friends were doing. And they were all into Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High, which, I mean, they have their place. I'm like, oh, they're so great. You need to read them. And I read them and I was like, I don't like this. So my mom actually gave me the first set of books that I was really got me into, like, oh my gosh, okay, I have to do this more. And it was Liz Curtis Higgs' Scottish trilogy, which I think I've read at this point like 5 or 6 times. But yes, I have to be careful when I'm in the middle of writing a book. I have to read something that's not in my genre. Otherwise I get in my own head and be like, try to feel like I should be writing like that person instead of like me. And then I'm just tired. I teach middle school during the day, and I've got 3 kids who have full schedules. And so I typically only read in bed at night before I go to sleep. And there's some nights where I just can't even, like, I can't make it through a page before my eyes are closing. So I definitely feel like that has slowed down. And the quarantine changed it too. I didn't have the mental energy to invest in new books. I needed to read like familiar things. So that was unexpected too.
I feel we all went through that a little bit in the quarantine of like, we didn't want the unexpected. We wanted something we knew how it was going to end, and we knew it was going to make us feel
exactly. Yeah. Like that comforting old blanket or something, or good friend. Like, and it makes sense too, just given everything.
So, okay, what's your go-to genres then when you're writing? It's obviously not historical romance, perhaps. No. It's something else.
So, I mean, historical romance is like my jam. I love to read it. I love to write it, obviously. When I'm writing, though, I had been doing contemporary romance, which I do enjoy, but I've just gotten kind of sucked into romantic suspense. I read my first Natalie Walters book recently, and I absolutely loved it. Jamie Jo Wright is an autobi author for me. I'll read her anytime, but especially when I'm writing, she's so different from me and she's so brilliant. I kind of go the complete opposite.
Interesting. I read both of those, so
they're amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Book swag. Did you pick your book swag? What was your favorite? Like, was that an exciting, like, I finally get to have some book swag? Or, I mean,
yeah,
we love book nerdy swag stuff. So
totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was really excited when they told me that I could pick some swag for my launch team. And then I ended up with some of the extras. So I've been able to use some of those too. And then I was like suddenly overwhelmed with like, what if I come up with something stupid and they all hate it? just that performance anxiety set in. But I wanted stuff that was going to be useful to them. Like, I love bookmarks as much as the next person, but like, I get so many bookmarks. I wanted something different.
Yeah.
And the water bottle stickers are like such a huge thing right now. And Courtney Walsh makes the best bookish stickers for her books. And like, she was inspired by her. And so I decided I wanted a sticker, but I didn't want to just like slap the cover on a sticker. I wanted something that looked really cool that people would be proud to like have on their water bottle or their computer or whatever. And that could be a conversation starter when someone goes, "Oh, wow, what's that?" And so I was talking with the design team at Revell, who is absolutely amazing, because they take my, you know, like, what if we kind of, like, it kind of looks like this-ish, but sort of not. And then, like, it put this thingy that kind of goes this one way, but, you know, like, my total ramble. And they put it into this amazing thing. And they made this, like, Celtic knot shamrock. And then it's in a circle. And around the outside, we picked a quote from the book. And it really looks cool. Really, I love it. That is by far my favorite thing that we did. And then we also did a print that has the Lord's Prayer in Irish, Gaelic and English, which the Lord's Prayer plays a big part in the book. And the Irish language is a huge part of the book as well. So I wanted to represent that. And I love that too. But that sticker is like, I'll sit there and stare at it even now.
Yeah. I love stickers and also like pins. I don't know what the deal is. I could just collect them all day. I don't know what to do with them half the time when I get them, but I love them.
Yes. My daughter has one of those, like, it's a frame and it has chicken wire in it. And then it has a chalkboard on the top half, and she displays stickers that she wants to keep, but doesn't want to stick on something. She'll display those with the little clothespins, and then she can change them out to like change her mood or her seasons or whatever. And then she still has the stickers, but they're not like destroyed.
That's smart.
I mean, that's pretty nifty. We might have to look into that. Awesome. Cause once they're stuck. And then I put one sticker on my Kindle cover, and then I'm like, my Kindle cover is getting kind of worn, and I'm like,
the stickers on there.
What do I do?
That's so hard.
Okay, this question is kind of silly.
I'm okay with silly.
How does it feel to be books to
famous? Oh my gosh. Am I?
This is why I said it's silly. Is your inbox, your DMs, like, blowing up? Like, I mean, in all honesty, like, obviously people are probably tagging you in a lot of posts and sharing, like, your book and covers and graphics. So, like, I'm sure that that has to feel really good when you get tagged and stuff and, like, see the support of your books. Has that been
That's
fun?
Been amazing. Like, I've been blown away. I will admit, it is the weirdest thing. It's like, what is happening? But the support for this book has just been absolutely amazing. And I've been absolutely shocked at how far it has reached. And there'll be a lot of people that I've figured out are posting about the book, but they don't always tag me. I think it's because my last name is weird and they don't know how to spell it. but one day I just thought, oh, I haven't looked at the Danson Donegal hashtag in a while. And I clicked on there and looked through, and there were so many posts that I hadn't seen. And I felt so bad that I hadn't like responded to them in any way, but I couldn't believe, like, it's amazing that you work so hard on something. And I feel like, you know, it's a piece of my own heart that's floating out there in the world, which can be really intimidating. Because some people, like, a lot of people have really, really loved the book. Some people have really, really not liked it, and that's fine. But it's always a little bit weird. You kind of feel like you're standing out there. The response online has been incredible, and it's very, very surreal.
I don't know how you guys do it. Take the critique and move on.
I had a lot of authors tell me, don't read reviews. They said, have like a screener, someone that you trust, like go through and be like, hey, here's one you should read. And then other people be like, oh, don't, you know, and then hide the ones that you shouldn't read. Because some people can be just really mean. But I was like, no, I want to learn from my craft. And if multiple people say similar things, then maybe that's something I need to change. So at first I started reading and then I was like, you know, might not be. And then I think it was Rachel McMillan had said something really wise. She said, reviews are for readers. They're not for authors to like become better. That's what conferences and your agent and your beta readers and like your circle of trust is for. And I thought, you know, that's really wise because not every book is for every person and that's totally fine. But sometimes it's hard not to get your feelings hurt for sure. So I've stopped reading them.
Yeah. I was going to say, do you read them? No. I have mixed feelings about it. I mean, I can see from an author's point of view how it would kind of be overwhelming to get the feedback, the good and the bad. I mean, from the reviewer's perspective, like it's frustrating too, though, because we work on those reviews. And so it's like,
I spent so long as a reviewer and as a launch team member for other people that I understand what, like, I've read books where I'm like, you know, I really liked some things about it and there was some stuff I really didn't enjoy. And so I had to kind of land in a place where I could be honest, but not like vengeful. And those are the ones, there's some where like, and I've read reviews on other books where I'm like, geez, were they like mad at that author? Like, I don't understand why they're saying that. Right. But I want people to feel like they can be honest about my book. And so that's why I'm like, you know, you don't have to love it. If you want to give it, you know, half a star and you hated it, that's fine. But I don't necessarily need to go read all of that. You know, I can get my growth from other places. But as a reader, when I'm looking for books, like if I'm looking to read a new author, I do read the reviews because I want to see, you know, what other people say. So I think they definitely are useful for sure. And I'm grateful for every single one.
Yeah, for sure. Reviews are always helpful. I mean, not from the author's side, if it's going to beat you down. But for readers,
I don't know how people like can't say what they didn't like in a nice way. That always baffles me. I'm like reading, I'm like, you cannot like it, fair, but like, do you have to eviscerate the author? Like, I feel like this isn't like something that we need to like really tear them down for.
Yeah,
I think that's a healthy like way to view it.
Yeah.
I think you're handling it quite well.
Well, thank you. And I honestly, like, I don't try to read like a lot of the really great gushing reviews either, which there are so many out there and it blows, like, I'm so humbled. But if I read too many of that, then I'm all like, hey, you know, look at me. I'm like, great. And then I don't put the work in that I should at getting better and growing because we all have room for that. So yeah, it's a sticky wicket sometimes, but
it's true. This is why our book ratings episode, we said the 3-star reviews. Yes. Are find the
yep,
truth.
That's what I do too. That's where I hone in when I'm looking as a reader. Yeah.
As a reader, for sure. I'm like, probably not where you want to hang as an author.
I don't know. I've read some really nice 3-star reviews. So I think that's the other thing is a lot of people kind of have a different, like different people have a different scale. Like some people are like 3 stars, like it was solid, I liked it. Other people are like 3 was like meh. Other people are like 3 is great, but I didn't like, wasn't my favorite of all time. You know, it's so subjective that you just kind of have to take it with a grain of salt.
Okay. I have 10 get to know you questions that are just like randomly silly. So I'm going to ask, I think we can all answer that.
Yes.
Because I think that'd be awesome. Be fun. So, okay. First one, coffee or tea?
Oh, that's hard because when we lived in Ireland, it was almost always tea. And I love it. And I still, on a hard day, that's my first thing I'll do when I come home is I have to make a cuppa. But anymore, I tend to go towards coffee unless I emotionally need my Irish tea.
I was gonna say this is not a surprise. I am a tea all the way.
Love it.
Tea. I don't do hot drinks, and I don't like coffee. So,
Oh, there you go. More for me.
I'll leave it all for you.
I drink both of these. I'm kind of the same as you. So I'm kind of a tea snob. So if I can't make it the way it should be made and have the quality of tea that I need to have, it would be coffee. If I'm making it at home and I'm like doing it to my own like satisfaction, it might be tea. But just for general, like quick, get it done, get some caffeine, it's probably coffee. Yeah. Okay. Two, a day at the beach or a day in the mountains?
Probably a day in the mountains, but if I could like see the beach from the mountains, that would be cool. But for me, if I could be at the beach and have the whole experience without bringing half of it home with me in form of sand, then I might be more ocean person.
Yeah, I'm all about the beach. I like to look at mountains, but I don't really want to go climb up in them. I'd much rather just lay on the beach and rest instead of actually exerting myself to hike up the mountain.
Yes. Oh, no, I'm not hiking. I'm like in a cabin somewhere on the porch with my book and my coffee and watching the mountain. I'm not. No, we don't need to get too crazy.
Yeah, I'm totally at the beach because I've got my book and probably some shade in case I don't want the sun. And like the ocean sounds. I don't want to be in the ocean, but I'd like to be on the beach. I hiking in the mountain, like, ugh.
Bugs in the mountain.
Plus I don't like heights and I don't like the outdoors much. So I just don't know. And like the quiet, it might be too quiet.
Yeah.
So I feel like the beach is where I need to be with my book.
I like it.
Yeah. Okay. Name one pet peeve that's like a fictional pet peeve, like a pet peeve in fiction. Oh,
okay. I was all set to say hearing somebody chew. A fiction pet peeve. Gosh. Oh, I know. It's when like the main conflict is something that could be solved by simply having a conversation.
Oh, gosh, yes.
So good.
Like, I don't know. It's like, And I'm not saying that I don't ever write that because I'm sure I do and I don't realize it. But yeah, we're like, oh my gosh, just tell her.
Could you people just sit down?
It was your cousin and it'll be fine, you know, or whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that one is so bad. I think my brain's dead and I'm just going to go with the one we were literally just talking about before we started recording. But when they like allude to something that happened in the past with like little breadcrumbs throughout, I'm like, for the whole book. And it's this big reveal at the end. And you're like, especially when like we were discussing this, when the character knows something and it's just alluded to. Like it's different if the character has no idea what everyone's talking about. Which I feel like happened in yours, like some, like there was like mystery,
for sure.
Which was fine because the character herself didn't know. But if the character knows, we should not be like having this. Yeah, that one.
Yeah, there's no dramatic irony in that.
No, it's just frustrating. So both of our current reads have that, and we were discussing our frustration, and that is the pet peeve I'm going to go with.
Nice.
I mean, I was going to mention that too, just so I didn't mention the one that I always mention, but I'm going to mention the one I always mention because I also like, man, work today was a doozy and my brain is gone. So, running away. I cannot with the running away before you find out what the problem is. Like, I cannot.
Yeah.
With the running away. When they just like, throw their hands up and dash off. I just need you to stick around and just ask, like, why? Or why'd you do that? Or really?
Yes.
Like, just stay for just a minute and ask one question before you run away. I feel
like that fits in with the whole let's just have a conversation thing.
Stay for the conversation.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, one real life pet peeve.
Oh, yeah, Okay, now I guess hearing people chew, it like And my kids know it. And so they'll like play up on it when they're just feeling feisty. Yeah, I just, nope, can't do it.
The first one that came to mind is people looking over my shoulder while I'm doing something.
Oh,
like, if it's watching yeah. something, if I'm like anything, like if you are not invited into what I am doing, no way. And I have a lot of siblings, so I had to deal with this a lot. So yeah, that's probably one of my biggest. Leave me alone.
That's hilarious.
I'm trying to like narrow down like one pet peeve because I feel like as the older I get, the more I find I'm kind of a temperamental person, I guess, when it comes to things being the way I need them to be. I think like growing up, that was just such a dumb thing to say. Being trapped in a house of boys, which is my life, people like moving my stuff or using my stuff is my pet peeve right now. There's no privacy. There's nothing that's mine. And I just need a few things to be mine. So like you messing with my things, I just can't deal. And it's silly stuff, you guys. Like silly things.
Yeah, I have a mug like that. Like, don't ever use that mug. That's my mug.
Yes. Don't use my mug. Don't help yourself to my creamer in the fridge. Let's see. JJ took one of my vitamins a couple days ago and I let him have it. It was so dumb. He was like, well, it was just an immunity vitamin. And I was like, those are mine.
Get your That's hilarious.
He was like, okay, I won't do it again. And I was like, but you already did it.
They're tainted.
Yeah. So anyway, people using my stuff, I think. Yeah. Okay. The last fictional book that you've read, that you read.
Okay. I'm in the middle right now of Shadows of the White City by Jocelyn Green. I am loving it. I am savoring it. It is taking me a ridiculous amount of time to get through because of our previous conversation where I read half a page and then I'm out. Not because the book isn't compelling, but because my students suck the living soul out of me every day. And so I'm just exhausted. So yeah, that's what I'm in the middle of reading. And I don't remember what I read before. I liked it, but I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, I feel like Jocelyn Green's can sometimes like, they're just set at a slower pace. So it's not like a binge read type of book.
Right. Yes.
No. Yeah. The last one I finished, I'm reading The Paris Dressmaker by Christy Cameron, but the last one I finished was World's Worst Boyfriend by Karina Taylor, which is a rom-com. So that was fun. That was a good one.
Nice.
I don't remember the name of the one I just finished. It's like a romance. Then, you know, they all sound the same sometimes. I think it's called One She Never Expected, and it's a book by Kay Leah. It was just like, it comes out next week. So it's just like a review arc thing. But that's the one I finished last night. So that was my last book. Okay, dinner at home or dinner out?
Dinner out would be awesome if the world weren't quite so people-y. because I hate cooking. I hate it. I do it, but like I'm actually dreading this conversation being over in some ways because I know the next thing I have to do is plan the menu for the week. And I don't like the pressure of like it all being on me because then if everybody hates it or it's something we've had a lot and they're tired of it, but then nobody gives me suggestions or they suggest stuff that I don't want to make. Like that is like 72 steps to dinner. I need like one pot dish. Let's go. So yeah.
I just need to send you my meal plan every week. And if you like it, I'll send you the recipes and that will just save you a little time. We should both have to do
right?
it. So
it's like, why do you people need to eat every day? I don't understand.
And more than one meal sometimes.
And the summer's the worst when the kids are home. During the school year, they are responsible for their own lunch. They have to make it. I get final veto on if it's appropriate or not. Like, no, you cannot have 72 jelly beans for your lunch. but they make their lunches. I was like, I'm done with this. you guys do that. So then I just have to deal with myself, but I'm annoying too. And I don't know what I want. So I still have to deal with an annoying person.
Can't win.
No.
See, I'm going to mix it up and I want food delivered to my house.
Nice. Yes.
I don't want to cook the food, but I also don't want to go out with the people. So I want like food delivered to my house where I can sit on my couch, watch an old episode of Friends, and eat my food.
I like it.
I feel like I'm going to say dinner at home because, again, as we've discussed, I'm kind of picky. And every time I get dinner out, I'm not satisfied by it. So I don't know. I'm not coming off great in this episode, you guys.
You're picking
it. You've sent me, you've actually sent me the Instant Pot recipes, right? Yes. Those have been really good. My whole family has enjoyed all of those.
I feel like because I cook for a living, so I'm just naturally like that's what I'm most critical of. So I don't like if I'm going to eat out, it has to be better than what I can make at home. And I typically don't have the time or can't afford that. So I'm eating at home, basically. And yeah, we do Instant Pot once a week, like one meal a week. I do an Instant Pot meal. So I do have like a repertoire of ones that I know are good and that most people like, because I just make one meal a week, an Instant Pot meal.
Yeah, I've enjoyed them. Yeah. My family's enjoyed them. So that's been awesome.
Okay. Would you say that you're more of a cover snob when it comes to books or a character snob?
I think I'm for sure cover snob, because I'll sit around and talk with people about books and they'll be like, I just loved like the character growth of this guy. Like he's, you know, they like have all these, I feel like I'm like Adam Sandler going to Stanford or something. I'm like, how did you see that? And then I feel like I should see all those things because I'm a writer and I do put stuff like that into my books, but I don't tend to get as turned off by characters as I am by wonky covers. Yeah,
that's fair.
Yeah, I'm more of a character snob. If a character annoys me, I'm out. I can deal with an ugly cover. I don't have to see it when I'm reading the book. So it can be what it is. I like a nice cover, but I'm not going to like, I don't pick up a book or not pick it up based on the cover. And if a character sucks, then it's much more annoying to me.
Yeah.
I don't know why I wrote these questions. They're so terrible. Because I'm like, both. I can't deal with either of these things. I'm a character snob and I'm a cover snob. I'm just a snobby person. Here's the deal. Because I don't read book blurbs, the cover is the first, like, getting me into the book. Like, if I don't make it past the cover, I'll never get to the character that I may eventually hate. So, but in all actuality, I feel like more often than not, if I had to choose, I think I'm more of a character snob because I have certain pet peeves that I can't like with characters. I'm kind of more on the picky side when it comes to heroines. So I am pretty picky with covers, but I think that, a character inside that's kind of giving me bad vibes, it's more likely that I'll have trouble with the book. So maybe a character snob. Nice. Okay. One author that you would like to have lunch with. I mean, let's say that they're alive. I don't like it when people are like, one author living or dead.
That's just creepy.
I'm like, that's weird. Yeah. So they have to be alive.
There's like so many. My, like, I don't know, my author maven, I don't know what to call it, like, that just the total fangirl would have to be Liz Curtis Higgs. Like, she's so epic, and I love her writing so much. And I've always thought she would be great fun to just hang out with and have tea and stuff like that. So, yeah, I would probably pick her.
Okay,
I'm cheating. Abby? I'm gonna go too. I want to have lunch with, you have to be there too, Susan Tuttle and Rachel McDaniel. because it needs to happen. We would just have, I mean, we all get along and we talk all the time, and I just think us four having lunch would just be the best.
Oh, would we be eating, or would we just be
watching?
Oh,
we'd be watching a movie and eating popcorn. An old movie.
I think I'm already having popcorn and movies with Rachel and Susan, that I feel like I would pick Natalie Walters, because I think I would have a lot of fun with Natalie. I think we would have a lot of jokes, a lot of laughing, and I don't think that she would require me to like wear anything other than a t-shirt and jeans to like hang out, because I feel that she could deal with my current level of mess.
I get those vibes from her too. I actually was like this close to being able to meet her, but because I'm oblivious, her debut was releasing from Revell the same year that I signed my contract with Revell, and we did my contract announcement shoot when we were in Hawaii. Her and her husband have been in Hawaii, stationed there with the military. We got home, and that's when I first started like following her. And she posted something about Pearl Harbor, and I was like, we were just there. She was like, no, I'd love to meet you. So it was like literally just like 12 hours difference, and I could have at least said hello in person. So yeah.
Maybe when she moves back to the States and there's like a Revell get together conference situation, you can make it happen. I would sit at her table, that's for sure. Okay, your desert island snack.
Reese's peanut butter cups, hands down. And maybe a side of Nutella.
Nice. Not bad.
I don't know. I was just trying to figure out. I'm like all over the map with snacks. I like different snacks at different times. Mm-hmm. I'd probably just go with like a bag of chocolate chips, because you can't go wrong. Like
that's true.
Chocolate is never a bad idea. Except for maybe on an island, if it's too hot and they melt, maybe I should have that.
But then you have chocolate sauce and it's wrong. Still okay.
Pour it over a coconut, you know?
Yeah.
This is not bad. I'm going to go with popcorn, because not that anyone's surprised.
I was literally mouthing popcorn as you said it.
I'm a creature. I just love popcorn. I love it. Any way it comes, I love popcorn. So, popcorn. Okay, this one is totally, utterly ridiculous. If you had to choose fuzzy blankets or fuzzy socks.
Oh, now that I'm in Phoenix, I would probably have to say fuzzy blanket, because we keep our house really cold because it's like 11,000 degrees outside. but when we were in Europe, I would have taken both because I was freezing all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't like socks, so definitely a blanket.
Nice.
I think I'm going to go with blanket as well. I mean, I love a good sock, but I feel like I always have a blanket on me when I'm relaxing. I don't always need to have socks if the blanket is warm enough. So practically, I think the fuzzy blanket is where I'm going to land. Yeah. You guys, that was all of my questions.
That didn't hurt at all.
Painless as possible.
I feel like you answered them admirably. Everyone had good answers, and now we know a lot about each other. Yes. Good or bad.
Jennifer's never talking to us again.
Yeah. I'm over here going, oh, I'm glad I didn't say that. They'd have really thought I was weird.
So, Abby, do you have any questions or anything you want to add to my list of things here?
Good ones. So, I mean, maybe if my brain was fully functioning, but it's dead. So, I had a long weekend.
Oh. All right. Do you have, I mean, you probably don't have any questions for us. We're not that
well,
excited.
I mean, I'm just learning this side of the Bookstagram world. So, I mean, I followed you guys forever. And I've always been really encouraged and inspired by what you guys do. So I just am excited that I got to hang out with you guys for a little while.
Yeah.
I mean, it was really fun. Are you going to be hopping on the bandwagon of doing all of these author reels?
I don't know. I did one on St. Patrick's Day. I did a reel making Irish brown bread.
I liked that. Yeah.
Well, that's
and
good.
It made me want the bread. And that's when I messaged you about the recipe.
But I was not in it, except for my hand, doing a funky snap thing.
We had this conversation. We did the other day about like us like loving some reels, mm-hmm. but also we don't
yeah.
want to be in.
Like, I mean, the stuff that I see, you know, the weird dances. So we went bowling as a family last night and we've been watching Perfect Strangers with our kids. We've thrown it way back 80s style and they love it. And there was this one episode where they go bowling. And of course, it's just like this game they play on Meepos, except for Balky. He has to do this crazy like duck walk thing and chant and stuff before he rolls the ball down. So we all took turns doing the Meeposian bowling thing. And of course, the kids thought it was great fun until mom tried it. And then it was mortifying. And so then, of course, I was like, you realize that just means I'm going to do that more. So like, I'm not above being silly and stuff, but when it comes to like reels, I don't know. I feel like I'm getting a little bit old and I feel a bit like a monkey doing a math problem. It takes me like that brown bread thing, other than throwing in the baking time in between, it took me like an embarrassingly number of takes to like figure out what to even do, like how does this work. And you know, there was one where it was like my face and not the bread, and I don't know, I'm not sure the world is ready for me to jump full time into the reels just yet. Yeah,
I mean, you're not alone, don't feel bad. We've had all these conversations. It's totally fine. Just do your thing.
I mean, every time I watch Melissa Ferguson, I'm like, girlfriend was made to make these reels. Like, they are amazing. And then I'll like try one myself. I'm like, oh, yeah. That is not for public consumption. Yeah. So mad props to people who can actually like do it and pull it off. Caroline George, she's another one. She does amazing reels. But yeah.
I don't think I've seen her.
Like, yeah, she just released Dearest Josephine. Yeah, so she does some really good ones.
I have a copy of that. Okay, where can everyone find you? The title of your book, all of that information before we go.
I guess kind of the one-stop shop where you can find all of the things from me is my website. It's just jenniferdeibel.com. And the book is available pretty much anywhere books are sold. And it's called A Dance in Donegal. And next book, I'm hoping to be able to announce the title soon, is slated to release in February of 2022. I'm very excited about this story. Also set in Ireland, set in Galway in 1921, just as the war for independence is ramping up. And it's got a lot of the same Irish charm to it, but I feel like the story has a much different feel to it. So I'm very excited about that. And I'm hoping.
Okay. Do you have,
I'm hoping so. Soon? If the timeline goes like it did with the first book, I'm hoping to see the first mock-ups maybe in May. And then I think we did the public reveal, I want to say in like June or July. So they did an amazing job with the cover. Like, I've been blown away. And then the covers they've done since then have all been awesome. So I'm super excited to see what they pull together from my ramblings for this one. So yeah.
I bet that's always a little bit nerve-wracking.
It is. It's very exciting. And this story too, like, I could love a story more than I did A Dance in Donegal, but I think I do. And I don't know if that's just because that's the book I'm working on. Like, if I get to do a third or a fourth book, if each one will subsequently become my favorite, I don't know. But this book surrounds the legend of the Clotter Ring, which is the ring with the heart that has the crown on it and the hands holding it. That was originated from the Galway area. So I'm very excited.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That sounds interesting. All right. Well, thank you for coming on and chatting with us and answering all of my questions and putting up with our
laughter. Oh, I loved it. It was awesome. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope you enjoyed this episode.
You can find us on Instagram at Basically Bookish Podcast. Hope you have a great day, and we'll chat with you next time.